It's not just that they got lemons or limes and they found that that was because it was the vitamin C, the ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid, that name comes from anti-scurvy acid. So that's what that means. In fact, the first isolation of it allegedly was from adrenal glands from monkeys or something. And then also adrenal glands, maybe from guinea pigs. They decided that guinea pigs didn't synthesize C. I used to believe that. You know, I don't believe any of this anymore because I just don't trust anything anymore when I hear it from these mouthpieces of science. Because, you know, and think about what that does to us psychologically. You're very similar to a guinea pig. Humans and guinea pigs share the same thing in common. No other animals, right? That we can't synthesize our own vitamin C. What does that mean? We can't make our own chemical C. They still haven't found C. And, you know, and also it's like, it's just that they happen to have guinea pigs on hand as the lab animal that they were experimenting on at the time when they were trying to find vitamin C. Literally, that's all that was happening.
Welcome to the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show, a podcast discussing personal and environmental health. Conversations searching for truths outside of the mainstream narrative. How much can we grow if we expand our thoughts beyond what's approved by the media and social media algorithms? Come with me and broaden our knowledge, hear some alternate views, and let's make up our own minds.
Fair Food Forager.
Changing the way the world eats
by making ethical easy.
That sounds like a very good idea.
Fair Food Forager.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show, the podcast brought to you by the Fair Food Forager app, the world's only ethical social media and sustainable food directory. So you can use this food directory when you're on the road to find ethical and sustainable food. Cafes, restaurants, farmers, markets, bulk food stores who are reducing the impact on the planet by reducing waste, food waste, plastic waste, sourcing locally, finding organics, anything like that. And you can also share posts, recipes, food that you're growing, your appreciation of nature, your bushwalk, your beach cleanup, anything that helps each other and the planet. Welcome to part two of my conversation with author Shannon Rowan. Remember, she is a fine artist with many illustrated books. She's a photographer, geopolitical and health author and researcher. And she has many books, including Wi-Fi Refugee, Plight of the Modern Day Canary, Shots Fired, Vaccine Weapons, Medical Tyranny, and The War Against Humanity. And she's the co-author with geopolitical author John Hamer of Welcome to the Masquerade, Prelude to the Coming Reset. In this conversation, we talk more about vitamins, and that's twice in two podcasts, I believe, where vitamins appear to be in this same realm as germ theory and viruses. It's a very interesting conversation. I hadn't heard it before until very recently. So we talk about vitamins and a little bit about the pandemic. So without further ado, here is Shannon Rowan. Do you have some time to talk about vitamins?
Sure. And I should, because in case people think I'm just complete loony and they'll just miss everything else I said, unless I explain myself a little bit. Okay. So I got interested in this just because I found that somebody sent me a Substack article about the toxicity of vitamin D, but then the same person had not questioned vitamins and started questioning them and has been writing some posts, blogs about it. And I was like, huh. Because I tended to not take synthetic ones, just thinking, well, it's got to be a chemical. I don't really know what that is. And so I try to just do all natural medicines. However, it's sneaky. You know, it's in a lot of stuff. In fact, you could be getting like what you think is a plant-based whole food supplement, and then they have also add the chemical vitamin C in there or whatever. Anytime you see vitamin something, it's a chemical, period. If it's added as a vitamin, it's a chemical. This is not being even derived from nature. When they make these chemicals, it's not coming from an orange or anything anymore. Citric acid used to come from lemons, but they make it from black mold. Citric acid is made from black mold, and that's citric acid today. So, and that's added to a lot of stuff, which makes me kind of, they admit that the molds can grow in the body. So actually ascorbic acid for vitamin C, they admit can grow in the body, and, but they don't think it's a problem. So I'm wondering about a lot of this, like perpetual colds and flus, if there's a fungal component that's like coming from our foods or coming from our air. But anyway, but the vitamin history, I'm like, I need to look into vitamin history. Cause you know what, cause how long have we been talking about vitamins? Not long. Exactly, almost just 100 years, right? So this is like 1920 roughly that they coined the term vitamin. And so we're talking about 100 years only that we even ever heard of this word. Yet how many people believe that they're real? Who even would question such a thing? Obviously that's factual. You know, that's science, like vitamins. They're in, you know, they're natural, right? It's, what is a vitamin? Okay, so that's an interesting question, which is why I started looking. So we've got these, all these different Nobel laureates and Royal Society members, you know, in the, like involved in discovering vitamins. And what's very interesting about the discovery is very similar to viruses, that they discovered them before they isolated them. All the discovery times came at least years, maybe 10 years before isolation. So they, how do you discover a vitamin when you never saw it, but they are credited with discovery? Like, this is what's happening, right? So it's real. The first experiments were animal experiments in the late 1800s. So basically, these chemists were trying to figure out what food was. They wanted to be able to synthesize food and make fake food, like in the lab, which is still going on today, as we know. And I obviously, for some monetary gain, you know, like if you could make food and it's cheap, then that would be great, right? And they can say that you're going to solve world hunger or whatever lofty thing you want to do, but basically they're trying to make money. And so they're doing these cruel animal experiments where they decided food meant protein, fats, minerals, no, protein, fats, carbohydrate, and salts, and that's food. So if you just make those in the lab, then that's food, or it should be. But animals kept dying when they fed them this stuff. They couldn't figure out why. They said, huh, animals dying from my food. It has all the components of food. Why are they dying? And so they thought, there finally somebody's like, there must be something else we're missing that's in food, something small and essential to life. And that's what vitamin basically means. Vita comes from vital. And then amine was like, they thought it was a nitrogen-based thing, which it turned out not to be, at least according to them. So they had to drop the E at the end and make it vitamin, because the scientific reasons, the person who said this at the time said, like 1920s, said, well, because in the scientific nomenclature at the time, nomenclature, you can have, if you have an unknown substance, you can end it with IN to indicate it's an unknown substance. So basically they named an unknown substance. That's what vitamin means, a vital unknown substance that's essential for life. They know it's there. They just have to spend the time to isolate it. But they were already coming up with patents and names before any isolation stuff happened and fighting over that. So it went from germ theory to, it's very similar to germ theory in that a deficiency of diseases, right? So you have the germ theory for a contagion, and they needed something to, for something that looked like a disease that wasn't contagious. And they linked it to diet. And basically what I understand from these links was just that people were starving. And when you're starving, all kinds of things can manifest as disease. But they want to know exactly what starvation means. Like, so they have this idea of malnourishment, which means like you're just not getting the right vitamins, the right mixes. And the science has to tell you exactly what those ratios are, because they're chemists and everything is reduced to that. Every human, every life form is reduced to its parts. So that's how we're looking at this. And to me, that's flawed thinking. And that's what keeps getting us into a mess, you know, because then they say, well, there must be another. So they had like a few vitamins to start with, and they thought there's probably more, and there's probably cofactors and other micronutrients. And then, so this is where we are today with this. And all these men getting all this credit for torturing animals and never proving that their vitamins really help anybody. And actually, when you look up the manufacturing safety data sheets for any vitamin, all of them say use advised against in food or drugs or even pesticides. And they all have different levels of toxicity warnings and hazards. So what I think, and especially when you look more deeply, which I'm doing, at like which a vitamin so-called causes what toxicity, then you start to see other agendas at play when they want to force you to eat them, when they want it, just like vaccine mandates, when you fortify food with this stuff and you staple foods all across the world and you say, we're going to attack all the staple foods, which is started with salt, went to milk, and then went for bread. And that's what got fortified, and rice, you know, and this is what's still being fortified. And there are actually mandates for this in a lot of our, you know, countries, and there's actually pushing for more. So right now we're lucky in that it's only like stuff that's already been stripped of something like white rice, white flour, you know, has to be fortified. It's skim milk has to be fortified. You know, whereas if you want to buy something whole, it doesn't have to be, so you can actually get food that isn't poisoned. But recent years, and this is very, people don't hear about this, but there's some pressure now on the UN, which has the food committees, you know, combined with the World Health Organization, they have Codex Alimentaris, which is like super scary organization, which gets to dictate to any UN member nation, like what your food, what should be in your food, how it should be labeled, all these things related to food and selling food and what's in it and how it's treated and everything. So there's pressure on them from chemical organizations, of course, again, like chemical manufacturers, to say that folic acid needs to be mandated, not just in like white flours, but in everything, whole wheat, everything needs to be mandated because of some birth defect that they're pretty sure it can prevent, but it might also lead to some other issues, you know, but that's okay. And, you know, it's not regulated. Nobody's going to be able to say how much folic acid you're getting, like how much bread one person's eating versus somebody else or whatever. You know, what if you had like multiple things that's fortified in a day? Isn't that going to go over their recommended allowances for these chemicals? There's so much to this. I mean, I'm definitely writing another book because it's crazy. There's like the vitamin D thing. Vitamin D, now everybody's deficient, right? It's like they're saying everybody's deficient. Vitamin D is a rat poison. It is a steroid hormone. It is classified as rat poison and a steroid hormone. And they're saying people are deficient in it. When you take the D test, what you're deficient in is a chemical, the chemical D. If you don't have enough chemical D rat poison in you, you need more. Like, that's what they're saying. Like, you should be glad you're deficient in the chemical if you're getting tested for these chemicals. They're testing for the chemicals. They can't find vitamins in you. That's not something they can find. They're testing for chemicals. So this is why I'm getting into this. It's like amazing. So
you're not saying that food doesn't have some sort of nutrients that your body requires. Some of it has deteriorated over time, like by spraying the ground with Roundup, and so that vegetables aren't absorbing different nutrients from the ground because the ground is dead. And a lot of that comes back to microbes again. And we're not saying that different fruits and vegetables and meats and things and seeds have different types of nutrients, and all of those are requirements of the body. What you're saying is when they say they've synthesized what's in a tomato or a beetroot or a steak, what they're saying they've got out of it and they're giving you in a pill is not the case. That's where it becomes not real anymore.
Yeah, they've never been able to they've claimed to isolate sometimes from nature. And that's just a interesting thing. I finally read the first isolation paper, you know, abstract, and it's so absurd. It's insane. I don't know what they mean by isolation is not what we mean. Let's just put it that way. So, but yeah, they're saying that it's the same. Like, they're trying to say that the chemical is the same as the thing in your food, and you need a certain amount of this thing, and you should take this, and we're going to market it to you. And guess what? Vitamins, they are sold. These are the same pharmaceutical companies pushing the vaccines and making them. Same companies, Pfizer, Merck, making your vitamins, you know, with chemical companies with them. And these chemicals are coming super cheap to them from India, China. They're often byproducts of steel manufacturing, things like that. So it's like putting fluoride in the water. It's the same idea. It's like, you can get this, like basically take it off our hands. We're going to give it to you. It's almost like pennies. It's just like, you can buy 2000 ton barrel of, which vitamin was it? It might've been E or for $10. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, you could buy your own vitamins. You go on India Mart. It's called India Mart, and you can get 55 gallon drums of B12 and all this other stuff. And just why even pay for the pills? You know, that's really essential to your, and there, you know, you have to wear all this like hazardous material stuff when you're handling it and everything. There's a lot of warnings about it, but hey, you could get all that shipped to your home and, you know, you'd be make all your own vitamins. But this is the point, is like this idea that they can replace food, they can replace nutrients themselves, and it's equivalent or better, you know, even better than nature's food, what nature gives you. And it's like going to afford you some kind of protection to illness, just like the idea of vaccines. Like by poisoning you, we're going to afford protection and we're going to help you have health. Now, in terms of like, actually, I still don't trust them when they try to dissect anything in nature and say, we know what nutrients are in there. And like, we have that mindset, like, well, there's a certain nutrient in that, certain nutrient in that. And that's a mechanical way of looking at it. We've gotten really far away from just having an innate understanding and connection with our natural world, knowing what's good for us and isn't. It was just by our own body's wisdom of, I need to eat this or that. I mean, that's what people have been doing forever. Like, you know, and it does seem like a variety of stuff is good. Why? I'm not really sure. Do I need to really know? Can't I just feel that out? You know, I mean, why did we even come to a place in history not that long ago where they were trying to understand, they were saying the reason they started these investigations was that nobody had a clear understanding of what a good diet looked like. Like, why wouldn't we know at the turn of the 20th century what a good diet looked like? I mean, how many thousands of years we've been here, we don't know what we're supposed to eat and what makes us healthy. The scientists have to now tell us, they have to discover it for us. You know, I mean, that's the kind of absurdity we're talking about. Why did we lose that knowledge? And I'll tell you why, because we disconnect ourselves from it. We cut ourselves off from our own wisdom and knowing. We've handed over that authority to the white coats. We've handed it over to all these people who say they know better than us. They're smarter than us. There's a lot of complicated mathematical equations they've got and graphs that we can't possibly understand because they're so much more intelligent than us. And they're going to figure out what food is and what we should be supplementing with and, you know, all these. And so, yeah, the whole deficiency diet, deficiency disease thing opened up another market for, in the same simplistic model, you're deficient in one vitamin equals one kind of disease. We'll just supply the vitamin back to you. Just like you got that one virus attacking you, creating this disease, we'll supply the thing to kill the virus for you. You know, and it's like, and then they do, I finally found some admission. Well, of course there can't really be, if you have a deficiency disease, it's not unlikely. It's really just one vitamin. It's probably a lot of different vitamins because, you know, you're starving, but it's like, but we can still pinpoint it kind of mostly to one vitamin. And usually if we just give you that one vitamin, it'll usually clear up the thing, even though there's probably other vitamins you need. So it's like that stupid.
So you started explaining about what they've done to food. So again, if you're eating bags of chips and lollies and soft drink and you're smoking cigarettes and you're doing all these things, there's no nutrients in there, even if they say. There are kids' cereal boxes that are just rainbow colors and they'll say that they've added niacin and vitamin B and all this sort of stuff in there. How can you honestly believe that? It's just a bowl of sugar. But they're saying, oh, yeah, no, it's actually really healthy. Just ignore all the sugar. But what when you historically, as you said, grains, milk, those things were unadulterated as they came out of the cow, as it came out of the ground, they made breads out of it. I've had a regenerative farmer on the podcast and he talked about his cows. They don't get sick because he has a variety of grasses and plants and trees and things on his property. And the cows just innately know what to eat when and so they don't get sick. Yeah. And he doesn't need to vaccinate them or do anything to them. He never needs to take them to the vet because they know what to do. And as you said, so do we. I find it interesting that things like lemons, for example, which was a grandmother's remedy for the flu, come onto the plant exactly the time of the year when those sort of illnesses come around. So is that just a fluke, or is that the way nature intended? Because here's this thing that's available that helps you, and then our ancestors have noticed that as well without people in lab coats, and we've followed that and it's worked for hundreds of years, but now we've got to ignore granny because the box of cereal has that ingredient in it. So talk about what they've done to food.
Yeah, it's funny. There was an ad from like the 40s when they really start pushing vitamins in the public, and there's a picture of grandma and like baking in the kitchen, and you know, and she says, said grandma meant well, but she didn't know about vitamins. She says that under it. That really stuck with me. So what they've done to food, wow, so many things. I mean, like a lot of us know, like those of us who are, feel like we're health conscious and we're trying to go for like so-called alternatives and get out of this like, you know, Rockefeller AMA medical web, you know, that's like entrapping us all. We know, we've heard about additives, preservatives, food colorings, things like that, aspartame, you know, like a lot of us have researched that and we understand that component. But the problem is the vitamins. We don't understand. We haven't understood the vitamins. We haven't seen that for what it is. And it's just another poison. So when you're even just like, let me go back to the first animal experiments, because this kind of sums it all up. When they give just the lab food, you know, synthesized components of what they thought was food, the animal, and with some water, the mice would all die. But when they changed the water to milk, then they were okay. Basically, I mean, like maybe not great, but they lived longer. You know, they didn't do these experiments for very long usually, so they didn't really know like really long-term outcomes. The assumption wasn't like, oh, the milk's good, the lab food maybe not so good. The assumption was there was something magical in the milk, the vitamin, you know, missing, that was allowing the animal to utilize the components of the food stuff that they made. Yeah, yeah, think about that. So to me, it's like the animals are getting a little bit of real food. And so they're surviving now that they have some real food in spite of being poisoned. It's helping them deal with being poisoned, right? So when kids are eating cereal and maybe they have milk with it, we usually have milk with it, right? Milk's kind of adulterated maybe, but maybe there's still something left in the wheat and the milk in the cereal that's allowing them to survive being poisoned, not surviving very well. But they're certainly not allowing them to utilize all the vitamins and things that were added, right? It's just that they're being poisoned again. Like there's just more poisoning. And so you see that with kids today, like they're not as healthy, obviously. And yet they have more vitamins than anybody ever had in the history of mankind, because vitamins only came out 100 years ago, right? So part of what happened was with vitamins and helped convince the public to get them was the fact that they were messing with food. So you had like Industrial Revolution. It's happened. The research was like right with the Industrial Revolution, with like, you know, manufacturing massive levels, like foods and things, and importing them and like messing with them. So salt was the first thing that kind of got messed with, I'll say, like refined, okay, bleached and refined. And so they were like, well, hey, people, you know what? Salt's missing iodine because we messed with it. They're like, and they'll say, they had ads like, is your food too modern? Maybe like, you know, it's too processed, and all this processing we thought was good maybe isn't so good, but we're going to give you some vitamins and that'll make up for the fact that we were messing with your food, you know? And so of course it doesn't, but it psychologically assures people that it's okay that the food's being messed with because the vitamins are added to it. So they added the iodine back, and the iodine wasn't what you think it is, like from seaweed or sea salt. The iodine was some manufacturing, you know, waste product, I forget which industry right now, but that they were like, oh, this would be great because we'd make a lot of money off of like stuff we got to dump it somewhere, just like fluoride. So let's dump it in the salt and we'll say it's going to cure goiter. And that's how, why everybody has to have it in the salt. Then they put it in the bread and they took it out of the bread again because maybe that was too much and everybody was getting goiter or I don't know, you know, getting other disease. And so you've got, just the milling process. But it's amazing now, the fortification process to me is one of the scariest things, because when you look at where it's coming from, and they have these bags of it from India and stuff, and it's like fortification mix, and it's not even really clear what's in it, and it's powder, and they show you I've seen some videos where they're like dumping it on the rice that they're walking around the floor, and they're like, look, it's fortified now. It's like, it's got all this powder in it. That's basically, it's just poisons in the food, more poisons. Some of the poisons, like vitamin A, have direct effects on fertility. Proven, they warn that it's actually like, yeah, can you know, kill your fertility, kill babies. Yet they want it for prenatal vitamins. It's in the prenatal vitamins. It's in, you know, baby's infant formula. So like, there's something going on here where it's like, if you want to really keep, like, you're pushing so hard to get just more poisons into us, there's got to be an agenda. But yeah, there's just been so many of the ultra processing of food. And then it's just like, it doesn't make any sense. And one of the first experiments that kind of led to vitamin discovery was to do with polished rice. So it was, there was this disease, beriberi, it was called. And it was like basically just more starvation symptoms, but they thought it was a specific thing. What was interesting to me is they thought it was the same disease as they saw in pigeons and some other birds they called polyneuritis. They say, well, they're also eating just polished rice. So maybe it's something in the rice polishings. So they took the rice polishings off, you know, which is the husk and everything. So they're like, we're going to give you this. And the thing is, they just feed only the rice, only polished rice to birds or just to people. And they were saying, well, these prisoners of war, weird, they're sick and beriberi, and they're just eating polished rice. So they thought there was something in the polishings that had a magical ingredient that, you know, because they put the polishings back or give them like whole grain, and then they were better in both cases. So they thought that's when they had to dissect it. And that's when they found thiamine eventually and named it B1 thiamine. And that's it. They called it anti-beriberi vitamin at first. But my point is, like, that a lot of these experiments too, they're not really doing controls. They're not factoring other things in, and it's not really clear about the diet. Sometimes when they even admit, like, they'll say, well, some of these other researchers, sometimes they would give real food back to the animals to like delay the malnutrition effects, you know, to kind of prove a point of their adding their vitamin was working. So just always messing with it. When you've got prisoners of war, I mean, what other conditions are they living in? And who just lives off of rice alone anyway? You know, obviously that doesn't seem like a good idea. Nobody's ever thought it was a good idea. Like, you know, but it doesn't mean that they need niacin. It's niacin. We found it, you know, yay. So it's just, this is the history of all of this. Every vitamin has this kind of story. C, of course, we hear about scurvy. What we don't know about the scurvy story, which I've been learning about in detail, is that it's not just that they got lemons or limes and they found that that was because it was the vitamin C, the ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid, that name comes from anti-scurvy acid. So that's what that means. In fact, the first isolation of it allegedly was from adrenal glands from monkeys or something. And then also, I don't remember which animal, but adrenal glands, maybe from guinea pigs. They decided that guinea pigs didn't synthesize C. I used to believe that, you know, I don't believe any of this anymore because I just don't trust anything anymore when I hear it from these mouthpieces of science, because, you know, and think about what that does to us psychologically. Like, you're very similar to a guinea pig. You know, humans and guinea pigs share the same thing in common. No other animals, right? That we can't synthesize our own vitamin C. What does that mean? We can't make our own chemical C. They still haven't found C. And, you know, and also it's like, it's just that they happen to have guinea pigs on hand as the lab animal that they were experimenting on at the time when they're trying to find vitamin C. Literally, that's all that was happening, right? So, and when they say that about us with rats and mice and whatever, similarities, same situation. These were the easiest animals to deal with for these experiments. So that's why they did experiments on dogs. I mean, they're domestic dogs. They're starving, and like then giving them weird foodstuffs and then giving them something else and seeing how quickly they died and what kind of symptoms they had while they died. Like, what kind of people can do that? Like, these are people we revere and they get the Nobel Prize. They're torturing animals and they don't seem to even, doesn't even bother them, doesn't faze them that they're killing dogs and they're killing all kinds of animals and starving them. So scurvy, though, what it was is like one of his captains, I think it was Lind in the 1700s, he realized that his soldiers, Navy men, they were having these weird symptoms, disease, you know, again, starvation, realized that they probably should be eating more different kinds of foods. They were just eating like rice, not much. And so he added, he didn't just add lemons, he added meat and vegetables and then some fruits to the diet. And guess what? They got better. They didn't have scurvy anymore. Amazing. It's amazing how that works when you feed people and then they're healthier. It's like, you know, but no, vitamin C, they didn't have vitamin C. There was never any, they didn't ever have vitamin C back then. They don't have any proof that like people didn't get scurvy from, because they have vitamin C pills, you know, like that's what we believe it's for. And it's just, there's nothing like that, that I know of any studies like proving that it cures scurvy or prevents it. And it, prevention, of course, is, that's a tricky one, because how do you prove it isn't preventing, right? I mean, like with anything, it's like you can pretend it's going to prevent something, but you probably wouldn't have gotten scurvy anyway because you're eating a lot of foods and you're not living in harsh conditions on a boat in the, as a soldier, you know, in the 1700s. So, you know.
There is a lot of things that are different.
Yeah.
You look at something like milk, they heat treat the milk, pasteurize it and homogenize it, homogenizing, making it all the same. They take all the cream out of the milk. They've heat treated to the point, UHT milk, I think, is heat treated to about 96 degrees Celsius. So they kill everything that's alive in the milk. And then they can sell you also products that have good for gut bacteria. So that, whereas that was possibly one of the things that the original raw milk straight from the cow, which people have drunk and didn't die, that had all that in it. And then they take it out and then they can sell you more products. So this topic, I'm very early to this. I've never heard it before until I listened to you the other day. And it does make me think now that even if you were on the side of this COVID scam, seems like a load of rubbish, you were hearing a lot of doctors saying, well, you need to be taking vitamin C, vitamin D. That'll help you not get COVID, or it just helps you in general. So if you're not taking pharmaceutical products, now they can sell you this one. So if it's the same company selling both, or behind the smaller companies that sell the vitamins, then they've got you either way. So there's a good chance that you're either taking their medications or you're taking their vitamins.
Yeah, I've definitely looked at it that way too. I can see that now. And I mean, I was not like a big advocate for like taking, I didn't take any supplement. I didn't take any synthetic supplements, you know, I wasn't like taking vitamins when they said that. I just knew that it wasn't real. So I wasn't worried about catching it, you know. And I never got tested either, but it's not like I wasn't really hardly sick at all in the last 4 years, maybe like old symptoms a couple times. I don't even know why now I think about it, but we did this whole experiment where we were drinking out of like people's cups without them knowing it, that were guests at the place we were staying, Airbnbs, where they were just coming and going. And we never used hot water or anything. My partner started it. He's like, I want to test this germ theory thing. Like height of the pandemic, you know, the worst pandemic in history. And like people coming from different countries, even at the time, were traveling to where we were. And he kept drinking out of their cups and stuff, never got sick. I didn't get sick either. I mean, you know, anyway, but you know, you hit the nail on the head there with what they've done to food. They take something out. So in the case of rice, you take the bran, then you could sell the bran separate. So it's really about making more profit or more products out of the one thing. Like you take the milk, you take out the fat. What happens to the fat? Do they make butter? What do they put it in? You know, they put it in something, sell that instead of just selling it to you as a whole. And then there's all these like businesses come out of that in manufacturing and, you know, just creating their empires and controlling the food. Controlling it, that's the important point, right? Not, you're not getting it from the neighbor anymore. You're not growing it yourself. Don't worry, they'll get it. They can keep it longer. That's the other problem. Like all the different ways they, you know, for shelf stability that they have for anything, like besides just cold storage, irradiation, coating it with something, you know, so there's a lot of things going on there. But yeah, back to that point about the kind of losing either way. Yeah, you have this, looks like there's an alternative viewpoint, somebody speaking out. And then they're saying, but take this. I mean, I was really suspicious about ivermectin. I've been saying in the beginning, like, do not take that stuff. I mean, like, why would you? It's just a Merck pharmaceutical product. It's like known to cause coma for little kids and stuff. I mean, like blindness and all this, like, why would you do that? But people were so in a frenzy, and even people I know were like, but they were getting like, they were, you know, coming down on them. So it must be real because they're being like vilified. I'm like, eh. Like, I still wouldn't take it. I'm like, I don't know. One person actually said to me, it's not a pharmaceutical. I'm like, it is a pharmaceutical product. She's like, I don't take some. I'm like, she didn't want it. She's like, no, that's not. I'm like, it is. What do you think it is? Vitamins? Well, again, vitamins are a pharmaceutical product. But yeah, the vitamin D thing, I even wrote about in my book that there was this character. I say character now because I don't even know if he's real, but there was a doctor who supposedly got fined like $500 billion from the FDA for like promoting vitamin D to patients for COVID, even though like the CDC was saying that vitamin D is great for viruses. And Fauci was saying, yeah, you could take some vitamin D. Yeah, because he's maybe he has money he's getting in from, you know, for the vitamin D too. I mean, he's certainly getting one. Somebody had a share in ivermectin. I think it was Bill Gates. So yeah, they're all making money no matter what. I mean, that's what you do if you're I wouldn't say intelligent and scrupulous, you know, and you're going to play all sides of the thing, right? You create a conflict and you play all sides of it. That's how you make the most profit. And they know that. They've been doing that forever. So it just makes sense to me that that's what they do. Again, same pharmaceutical companies. And they can even, that's what people do. And it's hard because you say, yeah, but the FDA, these doctors are always saying like supplements are, they're always saying they're bad and you shouldn't take them. And, you know, but they don't really say you shouldn't take them. In fact, more and more doctors are saying you should take vitamins in addition to their, you know, drugs and their testing for vitamin deficiencies and things. That's not really true. But at the same time, there is this like idea of that because the FDA has the warnings like, well, this isn't regulated. And so we don't know. And it's because of those warnings and the fact that people are like, must be good. If the FDA is saying it's bad, I don't trust them at all. So I'm going to take this. And I admit to being that kind of person. Like, I've definitely thought, well, that must mean it's good.
Got to admit, I was in that class too. So it's like a limited hangout, but really they're saying, if you don't agree with taking a vaccine that's experimental, you'll look for alternatives. Then they really poo-poo the alternative. So you think that one must be real. And again, it's the same thing again with the lab leak theory and ivermectin. Because straight away I fell for that. I saw them trying to ban something that was off patent and was very cheap. That's definitely got to have some benefit. And they even cancelled it. I know they cancelled it in Australia. You couldn't get it. So people were trying to get it in different ways. And then they had the whole horse paste thing. And Joe Rogan said he used ivermectin from a doctor. And so it's very well done. But if you get a hold of it, you're still making somebody money.
And you might pay the price for that. I mean, I know some people said it, they felt great, didn't hurt them, which is great. But other people I know end up in hospital. So, you know, I mean, it's a risk. And the thing is, it's like, it's the informed consent thing again, and we're misinformed at every turn. So it's really hard to get to the truth. And it's really easy. And I'm not blaming you or anybody, or just because I'm like, well, I knew. I'm not trying to, you know, I mean, I saw that one. I didn't see other things. I took vitamin D this winter and I paid the price for that. It messed with my hormones big time. And now I'm trying to detox from that. And I don't know why I fell for that again. And that's just why I think this is so important to talk about and to investigate, because I fell for it too. And I mean, even though I wasn't even taking synthetic stuff, I had somebody convince me that would be a good, safe one to take. And, you know, we don't get a lot of sun in the winter here. So I like fell for that. And my partner did too. And we both, some weird things happen in our bodies and I could go into, but it's like, we're detoxing it now. And I'm just and it's interesting because a person who advised it at a health food store, I noticed he told me he takes high doses. He built up to it and you could get a skin rash while you're, building up to that and stuff. Because when you have a skin rash, really that just means you're trying to get rid of a poison. But he said, I noticed he had really bulked up in the last couple of years since I've known him working there. Like, and I thought, I haven't talked to him. I haven't been able to see him yet to warn him about this, but I'm like, he's taking steroids. That's what's happening. And he like, that makes sense now to me why he bulked up so much. He's been taking all this D and he doesn't understand he's taking a steroid. So again, it's just, unfortunately you have to train yourself to kind of question every turn all the time. And it can be really exhausting. Rewarding eventually. Yeah.
With vitamins too, I know here the only place you could get vitamins, I'm not sure, say 10 years ago or 20 years ago, was from a I guess, a vitamin store, a health food store. And now the supermarkets, who are, we all know, are criminals. In our country, we only have really three. They've put everyone else out of business. They have shelves and shelves and shelves. They have pretty much a whole aisle dedicated to vitamins. And I have thought to myself, all of a sudden they're interested in health. There's got to be something else there. So that does make sense. There's got to be quite a big industry here now. And there used to be one or two companies. Now there's lots.
Yeah. And a lot of that's because of changes with, like, the doctors are promoting it now too. And they're testing for deficiencies supposedly and everything. And some people tell me, now maybe they bought out all the health food companies that were doing this. And it's like Merck and it's all these pharmaceutical companies. But what I'm learning from the history of vitamins is it started with the pharmaceutical companies. It's not like there were these independent, you know, health food people taking that and saying, this is what we want, you know, that they had our interests in heart or anything. That's not how it started. It started with these big players. You know, it started with the chemists, it started with the chemical companies. And then, and of course, that means the pharmaceutical companies. Of course, there might be, I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to tell people what to do or not with their vitamin supplements or anything. I think it's just a good idea to know, understand, and really ask what's in this, like for everything, anything packaged, especially, what does this mean? What does this one word even here mean? What does it even mean? Like, you know, a filler or something, like look it up. And I advise people to look it up, including MSDS, whatever they search, because that's the manufacturing safety data sheet. And they're the ones that are, like, tasked with being the most honest, because the liability falls on them, you know, so they have to say, and maybe you could argue, well, that could be a ruse, because they're just like FDA warnings sometimes, you know, if it's like an herb, you know, because herbs, of course, like herbs are ancient medicines and, you know, this is ancient knowledge, that's plant medicine. And of course, the FDA comes hard on that. And so the problem is we see that and then we see, well, if they come down hard on that and then vitamins, then we can just kind of lump it together, and it gets lumped together and it shouldn't be. You know, there's a difference. There's a difference between plant medicine and there is, and even just this in the sense of like a concentrated something, like concentrated juice or concentrated, you know, I don't know, making wheatgrass juice or buying that or something concentrated, that could be helpful. I mean, it's like, it's up to you. It's getting back in touch with that body wisdom that we don't know how to get in touch with anymore, I think, you know, is part of the problem. But I mean, you talked about your friend's cows, just kind of like knowing what to eat and when. I do that out here. I walk around and just grab things. I know a lot of wild food. So I like sort of like, sometimes I kind of step outside myself and realize how funny that might look to somebody else if they saw me kind of just bending over and grabbing something and just going along on my hike and just eating different things as I feel the need, and like, and then drinking out of the stream. And it just feels natural and right. And it's like, I'm not thinking, well, this is my vitamin C and this is my vitamin D and this is my, you know, and I'm making sure I get this much of this and the ratios, you know, we can never, yeah, it's better to intuit that, because you can't really dissect that. You can never really understand what the right ratio is supposed to be for you or somebody else, you know. But this is why, going back to what you said about getting taken in by some of this stuff, this is why it's so important to question why I keep going on about germ theory and things like this, because that foundational belief is what leads us to, better do something. And so whatever way you turn with that, you could be tricked. And if you just said, well, I'm not going to get this thing because it's not going to attack me and it's not a threat, then you're a lot more protected in that, you know, than you are in getting into the fear mode and worrying about something attacking you, lab created or not, you know. I mean, not that there can't be a lab created poison. I think they have to inject it, though. I think it'd be really hard. I mean, there are airborne poisons, but it's pretty difficult to apply those. Like, you have to be spraying it on people, I think, more directly and in their space. And certainly I consider people's perfumes to be an airborne poison, you know, but my point is that I still think that even if there was something going on with the lab, it would make more sense that has something to do with the vaccine, because proteins can be poisonous. And then, you know, venom, snake venom, for example, but has to be injected into you to really take effect. So if you can still say no to that, then you're ahead of the game, I think. But yeah, even then, it's like every time I say something now, well, we know this about proteins and this, I really don't know. I mean, I'm taking, you know, I'm taking the white coats' word for that again. It's like still reductionist. It's a tricky thing. We're so used to talking that way and thinking of everything that way.
Well, you see Peter Hotez, for example, when he's changing his mind over 2 or 3 years about don't take the vaccine because it was Trump's vaccine. Then it was when it was Biden's vaccine, it was okay to take. Then it was one dose, two dose, three dose, four dose. I never said it was only one, you know, but he's always wearing a lab coat and a little bow tie and stuff, and he looks very scientific. So he obviously knows what he's talking about, even if he is obviously lying and can't make up his mind over 2 years. But because of that outfit, it's like a politician here. They, every time they go to a, you know, they talk about a factory, they wear the fluorescent vest and the hard hat and the safety glasses, like they're in the thick of it, you know, working with the workers. But really, they're just trying to brainwash you into that they're, you know, with the people and they're helping us. What about things like zinc and magnesium? Because they're on the periodic table and they are, surely they're real.
Yeah, well, I wonder. I'm getting into the minerals a little bit. I think there might be something different there. The problem is there are like these different forms they talk about that can be chemically synthesized again. So even though there's minerals in the ground and we're pretty sure we know what they are, and I don't know if we know definitively. I don't know if there's a pure mineral is what I'm getting at, right? Is anything pure? Can you purify anything? That seems unrealistic to me. I think there is maybe a predominant something in some sample of something, but pure, like, you know, because anytime they purify something, I notice they add chemicals in that process. And you can't separate anything out from anything. Everything's
it's an oxymoron.
Got some connection. Yeah, it's not possible. So my point is like pure form. Yeah. So, okay, something that we call magnesium seems like, but then there's magnesium chloride and magnesium citrate and there's magnesium malate, you know, and then there's like zinc oxide and zinc. So there's this. So we get into this other problem of like, well, which one and what is it really doing? And mechanistic view? Is it, it's having this effect in this on calcium and it has this effect on this in your body? Maybe somewhat. I think, again, intuiting that is important and knowing where the source comes from. I've definitely felt I've benefited from magnesium at times, and then I felt like it wasn't and it was making me worse. But then again, there were fillers in that magnesium I was taking that I didn't think were that important. Interestingly, one of them is called magnesium stearate, and that is definitely listed as a toxic, harmful chemical. So the naming is tricky, you know, what we think of as a mineral. And there's minerals that we now, at least now, think are toxic. We didn't used to. Lead, we were told was fine, and now it's really poisonous. Mercury, we were told was a medicine. Now it's really poisonous. So those are other like periodic table elements, right? But they're heavy metals, so they're different. I mean, I think there's a balancing thing going on. For one thing, there's the how is this stuff being mined and manufactured? What is that process? Is it the element that's toxic? Is it a chemical added to it? Right. So the closer you can get to something just like coming right out of the ground and then doing something with that with your body is probably the best thing. Once it goes into these processes, then I don't really know what you're left with in the end. And I definitely have felt very sick taking zinc. I thought it was supposed to be good for me. The funny thing is that I look back and I'm like, it's supposed to be good for me. I better take it. I feel horrible. But I mean, just like vaccine attitude, like, well, you might feel worse, but you're getting better. Now I'm like questioning all these years of different supplements. Maybe I was just making everything harder on myself and spending a lot of money to do it. Because I'm thinking in that mechanistic view mindset, well, zinc is good for this because it does this to the thyroid and this levels. And, you know, same for iodine. I took a mega dose of iodine because I was interestingly told at the time by the naturopath that because iodine used to be added to the bread and it isn't anymore. And we used to get it from all these sources and now they don't. Well, when they did that, that wasn't actually a good move, you know, so that's not a good example. But I understood it to be a good example at the time. And I got a weird dependency with iodine supplementation and a hyperthyroid and then goiter and that. And I had to wean off of it, and then got hypersensitive to it. And now I'm just like, I'm not taking it. I think it's still maybe helping some people, again, depending on how it's sourced and whatever. I'm not telling you what to do. But the kelp, I just take some kelp powder now, and that's good. And I don't have any goiter symptoms anymore or thyroid symptoms. I harvest kelp from the ocean too, and other seaweeds out where we live. And it's pretty clean water up here for what you can get these days. And it seems good. So I still think food sources are probably better for everything. I have really liked Epsom salt baths in the, you know, over the years, and that's supposed to be just mined out of the ground. And like, you know, it doesn't have any manufacturing safety data toxicity warnings. So I think that's good. But I don't know. Can you get into some weird imbalance because of a lot of that? Probably like moderation and everything and balance and everything is another good principle to adhere to in anything we're doing, you know.
I guess what I'm hearing when you're talking about this, and obviously there's more research to do on the actual synthesis of vitamins. It relates, a few months ago, I had an issue with my mouth and my throat where I had this sore, just pretty much like it was almost like a burn. And it lasted for about 3 weeks and I couldn't eat. And it was basically my father passed away. I wasn't sleeping because of a newborn baby. Bit stress type issues. It seemed to come out of nowhere. Mark advised me to take bone broth. And I couldn't eat anything else, but I could drink the bone broth as a tea. And that was the only thing I could really enjoy the whole time. It was horrible. I couldn't even drink water, which was unusual. Water was painful, but bone broth wasn't. It made me think about butcher shops here. They're harder to find now because the supermarkets have put them out of business. But my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents ate all parts of the animal. They ate lamb's fry, and you start thinking about the nutrients that you're getting from all those things. And then I've heard recently that you can purchase salt that's just been collected from the ocean, from the rocks around the ocean, that, and it's moist, it's different, it's flaky. Mm-hmm. It's not like the powdery stuff that you buy from the supermarket. That, as you mentioned about the seaweed powder, there are products that you still can get from that are just the thing dried out. And maybe that's not as good as getting it, but if you're in a place where it's not growing, then that's a good way to supplement perhaps. So we're not saying that you can't get anything. And then permaculture, they're building their own soil and adding and using the composting food scraps and weeds. Permaculturists will eat the weeds that are growing in around the garden as well. So there's all this extra variety, and you're growing things in season. You're eating them at the right time, as we talked about before. So really, and these type of stories are growing. I think people do get this, but it's letting go of the guys in the lab coats and the health system and the billionaires that run them with their donations. It's getting away from that and going back to, as you are, living in nature, which is where this podcast started, funnily enough. And I went into the whole, you know, in inverted commas, conspiracy world, but it actually, a lot of it does make a lot of sense. And if you never trusted the system in the first place, then you really don't have that far to go. You just have to take one foot out, because you've kind of stepped in, you're in both now anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have worms living in my bathroom because I make compost food with our worms. We have like some colonies of worms in my, you know, thousands of worms in there anyway. But yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. I, you know, your symptoms sound exactly like what I went through when I had supposedly had mono. You've heard of mono. I mean, that was like kind of more of like American disease. I don't know if you guys got it there, mononucleosis, but I got it in my senior year of high school. Was never so sick before after, I mean, in terms of acute illness, couldn't swallow hardly. I would wake every time I swallowed my own saliva. It was so painful. And I actually went to the doctor, and we didn't actually go to doctors that much in my family just because we didn't have like the healthcare and, you know, couldn't afford it that much. But, he just said, he just like got my symptoms and said, I was hoping it was strep throat because I knew you could take antibiotics for it. And then he said, no, you can't. It doesn't, there's no cure for that. You just have to bed rest. He's like, you got mono. I just like got my symptoms and everything. And maybe, oh no, he did the culture. Because if you don't have the strep, to whatever bacteria on your throat, you don't have strep, you have mono. That was their scientific approach, you know, to that. And so I was just like, what? No drugs? But it was really painful. And I could only have like teas and soups and like could hardly drink water. And, but you know, I suffered a really big loss at the time as well. At least almost, I had a boyfriend try to kill himself. And that was pretty traumatic for me, you know. And right after that, I was like bedridden for 3 weeks and like lost 15 pounds and could hardly eat and had all these other weird symptoms. And I really still thought it was like this, I was attacked by the virus or something. They don't have a cure for it. You know, maybe recognize, yeah, I was under a lot of stress. I mean, I was about to have to go to college and, you know, all these things happening, big life changes at the same, all at once. So I think there's a place for, you've probably heard of German New Medicine. Have you heard of that? Yeah. Yes. It's like, and I touch on that a little bit in my book, but I haven't really delved into it a lot. I have a good friend, you know, fellow researcher who wrote my foreword, James McComiskey, who is into it pretty, like more into it, but he has got some pretty compelling arguments for that. But it sounds a little bit like psychological, but there is, it's like addressing the psychological component of health in that, in terms of like shocks, you know, getting shocks by like events that are really traumatic and it manifesting in the body. And the thing about the doctor who started that, a German doctor, he was a conventional medical doctor until he started to see the problems with that himself. Anyway, suddenly had his son died in a tragic accident. He was shot, wrong person being shot, you know, just like while he's on vacation. So it was really crazy thing for him. But he had developed testicular growth to like cancer. And so it was like just all of a sudden. And they finally realized it had to do with this crazy loss. And he started to see the pattern in the body of where specific events in life manifest it in specific parts of the body is the point. So, and he actually got it down to like a science of like, this causes this, you know, like this kind of cancer is like this kind of trauma and could actually help people that way. So there's so many components, you know. I think, again, we look at things holistically. There's a lot of things that happen when we become ill, and you can't always just pinpoint it to one thing. And we don't always have the answers, but science wants to say they have the answers and they want us to trust them while always changing the science, while saying science is evolving, you know, and don't do your own research and just trust us, right? We might get it wrong sometimes, but we'll eventually get it right. And don't worry, in the meantime, if you're one of the statistics for the when we got it wrong, you know.
Well, I guess it explains everything that we're talking about in these podcasts, is that your stress obviously has a big impact on your body. And prior to COVID, it was the biggest killer, because it caused so many other issues. And if you add stress to other things that are happening, environmental pollution, a lack of nutrition, then something's got to break down at some point. And I find, and sometimes some sort of illness like that one with my mouth was the only thing that would stop you from continuing to just go full steam ahead into a wall. So sometimes it might also be a signal from your body to just have a rest. And it did that, because I didn't go anywhere. I couldn't go anywhere. I wasn't really interested in going anywhere. It was just time and rest, a little bit of bone broth that fixed it up. So same topic. They kept us inside. They scared people on a daily basis. They made them wear synthetic masks on their faces. They weren't able to see people. And there you go. People get sick. And then it's like if someone reads a medical journal and then they start feeling the symptoms of what they've just read, COVID pretty much had every symptom on the planet. So if somebody had a sore toe, it must be COVID. And that's literally what it was. The tests don't work. They don't tell you anything. And you could also tell us about that, but we're probably running out of time. But there you go. I've got COVID. because the test told me I do, and I've got a sore toe.
Yeah, the COVID toe was a funny one to me, but I just so many people have said that to me, and I really thought I was getting through to them at the beginning, like some of my friends, and that were like, but I tested, but I was really sick, and the test said the test. I'm like, but the tests are the tests don't mean anything. Not only, I mean, I think they don't mean literally anything, but even the official stance is they were 80% false, so-called false positives, 80% false positive. You know, like that's not a very accurate test. Well, somebody actually countered me once when I was saying that. They said, well, no test can be 100% accurate. I'm like, but 20% accurate? I mean, yeah, you know, like in your, but it, even if it was 20% accurate, how do you know if yours is the 20% that's accurate when you've got your results? I mean, what's the point of them at all if you can't even get above 20% accuracy, according to them? And then it's like, well, how did you set that? I mean, there's just so much about it. There's so many diversions too, because again, we have to get back to the root of this. There's no virus. You know, you can't calibrate a test for a virus when you haven't ever isolated it. There's no paper definitively showing isolation at all. And when you just say that, the crazy thing is, and maybe we'll talk about this another time, is that isolation and proof of pathogenicity are the same. Like that's what Peebles brought in to this whole thing in the 50s, and he got the Nobel Prize for, was that the same, basically, I'll try to sum it up really quickly. This is the gross part. You get kidney cells from a monkey, grind up some monkey kidneys, you know, that's your sample, or better yet, aborted baby cow, you know, for the bovine one, or you could get eggs. That would be the most benign, but usually it's the baby, the sacrificed calf or the monkey kidneys ground up. And then you get a sample from a sick patient. And the problem is you're supposing that this person has COVID, right? So you're like, well, new disease. I'm deciding this is a new disease. Let's get their spit. So we know there's a virus in here that's going to go, we can name for this new disease. And now you're going to take that sample and you're going to put it into the other sample. And if the cells in that sample die off a certain amount of time and a certain percentage, voila, isolation and proof of contagion all in one. And you know what happens in between all those is all these other steps. They add lots of chemicals. They heat everything. They shake it up. And then they'll actually look, first you look at your kidney sample through the microscope before you add the sputum sample. And you say, huh, okay, I see some kidney cells. They look all right. They're moving around. And this is knowing that they're going to die after they're out of the body in a certain amount of time anyway, right? And then you leave that. Then you put the stuff, then you treat your other sample. You treat the kidney cell sample too. After you look at it, treat everything, treat it bactericides, dyes, other stuff, just standard chemicals for the procedure. And then you put it in there. And then you set it aside for 2 days. And then you look and see if the cells died and how much cell death there was. Over 50%, it is a virus and it is pathogenic for sure. And they never do a control. They never do any kind of control. They don't look at it in between. They don't see if cell death is happening earlier. They don't look at the sample by itself left alone and after 2 days and see if there's cell death there. They don't try spit from a person who's healthy and do the whole thing again. Nothing like that. That's science. That's called isolation. And that's called proof of contagion. And that's what we're dealing with here.
Importantly, too, they use other types of cells. And you would think if it's a human respiratory virus, you would use human lung tissue. But when they use those cells, nothing happens. So they use these green monkey kidney cells because the antibiotics that they use are toxic to these cells. So the cells start breaking down. And the image of the broken cells is what they call a virus, even though other scientists will say, well, hang on, without any COVID present, these cells die. And what we're seeing is the dying cells. So they even admit that what they're photographing is not a virus. It's a broken down cell. This is the science that they've shut down the whole world on. Surely, if you keep explaining this to people, eventually they're going to get it.
Yeah, and there's no scientific community consensus either, what we're always being told by the press. You know, there's lots of scientists saying this is crazy, like in saying this, like, look, it is crazy. I mean, of course, Stefan Leka comes to mind. He's like the one conducting the controls and showing that the same thing happens, that there is cell death with the control without adding any sick patient sputum to it, just by doing the processing that they do kills the freaking monkey kidney cells. Like you said, why isn't it? And all that could, even if it, that was true, all that's really, all that you can really draw as a conclusion from that is that that thing and that spit is toxic to monkeys' kidneys. You know, the green monkey's kidneys, it's pathogenic to that. Right.
And I guess what people imagine, if they refuse to listen to this podcast or whatever, because I've had people say, well, who told you? Where do they get their information from? And they, but I say, did you listen to the podcast? No, I didn't listen. I just know it's not true. Is what people are picturing is that they've just simply, and this is what would make sense to me, if they pulled some of the lung fluids out of a sick person, they put it in a dish, they pull out a virus, and they can separate things that are smaller than said viruses, look at that under a microscope, see it alive, pull it apart, get its DNA. That's never happened. So what you think has happened has never happened. So you're just doing the work for them based on absolutely zero science.
Yeah, you're right. We've been led to believe that's what's happening, and it isn't. And nobody's questioning that, because at some point they did something like that with bacteria. And so we just kind of assume that that's what they're doing now. And, you know, because that's what maybe we learned in science class when we were little and, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, but that's the thing. They've changed it all. And nobody really, they didn't happen just not to alert us to that big change of how they're doing things. So yeah, it's difficult because you have to, I mean, yeah, I'm not a scientist, so maybe I just don't understand. Like, that's going to be the, you know, a lot of people just be like, you don't understand science. I'm like, well, do you want, just explain it to me then. I'm happy to listen, explain it to me, you know? And if you can't explain it, do you understand it? That's what I want to know. Do you really understand it if you can't explain it? Of course, there's a lot of ways of making it seem incomprehensible, use of all this different language and Latin and sort of trying to make it inaccessible, you know, to us, to the regular man on the street. And that's part of that game, you know, it's just couched in all these highfalutin sounding terms that we, you know, just big words that we don't understand. And so that's where most people just stop. They're like, I just don't know what that means. So I'm just not even going to try. I'm not capable of, and we've been taught that we're not capable of understanding. You know, we've just been so put down from day one about our capacity, what we can achieve and whatever. I mean, it's all been kind of predetermined for us. And we're told it's predetermined in our genetics too, you know, things like that. And genetics is a whole other topic I haven't really gotten into yet, but which I doubt is like what they're telling us. I really doubt that one, because it's like the next kind of stage of mechanistic germ theory kind of stuff, where it's like, well, when they can't blame the germ, they blame genetics. And that all kind of stems out of eugenics anyway. And even before they had a gene, they had the idea of inheritance and the idea of bad blood, this kind of snobby family blood thing, like our bloodlines are better than yours, and you can't possibly come from that other bloodline and ever achieve anything. And we're going to just make extra sure you don't by poisoning all your food, and, you know, because we don't want you to compete with us or ever get to our level, because we're going to protect our own family bloodlines. Yeah, genetics is interesting, because I'm finding there's ties with the vitamin fathers of the vitamin discoveries, with influencing the team that found, you know, the double helix. In fact, it was it Pauling? So there's Linus Pauling's quite a character, and there's this other one that were like both credited kind of with the vitamin C discoveries, who also apparently influenced. I think it was Pauling who saw, he thought he discovered a single, he thought it was a triple helix or something at one point. He found a single one, and then Kirk and Watson found the double helix. And apparently, like, Watson's wife had a dream about a double helix before he discovered it. And there's just so much in that story that makes me suspicious. And the fact that when we look at like what we, again, we're seeing models, we're seeing drawings of the double helix. What's a picture of the double helix? So far I've just seen something that's supposed to be it, and it's like a line. And I don't really, so I'm not really sure what's going on there yet, but I'm pretty sure they're lying about that too. And just a whole other topic to get into, but genetic determination in particular, because I'm having people even tell me, well, you probably have a mutated gene. I've had people tell me that because of my reacting to being poisoned by my environment. And they do that. They say, if you are reacting to vaccine poisons, it's not the fault of them poisoning you. You probably have a mutated gene that you're born with, but they don't test for the gene before you get the vaccine and then after. So which thing came first, you know, which mutated what and when, and what does mutation even mean? How are they looking for this? I don't know if I'm going to be the person to really investigate that. I've got so many other things I'm investigating, but somebody will. And I think people are starting to question that. I think as we wake up and we're questioning all these paradigms and these institutions in particular, that's the important part, you know, because it's these institutions, it's the funding, it's the agendas behind the funding. They're telling us the stories that they want us to believe in because of an agenda. That's how I see it, you know, and this has always been the case. And so when they got into chromosomes and things and inheritance, they were singling out people for sterilization programs. In fact, Linus Pauling was a eugenicist. He advocated for forehead tattoos, not joking. So our revered Linus Pauling is Mr. Vitamin C man, of like megadosing vitamin C to prevent cancer and cure cancer, who died of cancer, by the way. Apparently that didn't work for him. He wanted to tattoo the foreheads of African Americans who might be carrying sickle cell anemia traits that they might pass on to children. If they had the tattoo, then the other person with the tattoo with that chromosome, a chromosome or something defective, they think that if they pair those together, they'll have a sickle cell anemia child. In fact, they're so sure of it that they wanted to tattoo those people, mark them on their foreheads, and thought that was a great idea because they didn't want to have, they want to prevent a poor little Black child coming into the world with that horrible disease. And this is not, again, they act like it's definitive science. They know these things, and it's only to constantly be proven wrong. So do we still trust them? We shouldn't, but people do. You know, none of this is anything that concrete. And it's a lot of guessing. It's mostly guessing. And it's also, again, agenda driven. And a lot of racism involved and superiority about, you know, bloodlines and things. So I would not let anybody collect your genetic material and then tell you who you are, by the way, you know, which is a lot of people are doing that now. I didn't realize I was this thing. I wouldn't have thought that I didn't know I had 2% East African, I don't know, something, no idea.
You don't do your own research. You're not smart enough. Prior to COVID, I would have thought if you were researching things, I would have thought you were a smart person. But during COVID, if you researched, you're a dumbo and you're just crazy white supremacist or whatever it is for reading. But the only difference between someone who's researching something and someone who's, say, if it's you're researching science or medicine, the only difference between an actual doctor and a scientist is they did a test at the end. You're both reading the same thing. Maybe you're freer to read what you want to read if you're doing your own research rather than somebody who's directed to read in a certain direction. So this whole narrative is just insane, and everyone should just ignore that too. And we could talk about censorship and all sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that goes right into censorship, because it's hard to do research when you don't know where to go and it gets harder to find stuff. It's not the first searches that come up on your search engine that seem like they're from different sources, you know, saying the same thing. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
So this is part of your book, Welcome to the Masquerade. You talk about Google and things like that as well.
Yeah, we have some censorship in there. Yeah.
Can we do another podcast? Can we talk about that?
Because the fact checking is, all these fact checkers that suddenly came up. Wow. I mean, I actually had a young girl say, "Don't we need fact checkers?" I looked at her, I'm like, oh gosh, is this what they're learning? I'm like, no. I'm like, oh, you don't even know what that means. The people just don't know what that means. Like, they don't see what's happening, who's appointing them, who's funding them, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, for one, and what the point of that is. And when it comes down to it, they say it's just their opinions, the fact checkers, when they say that you're wrong.
And something that an experiment that anyone could run is that if you are on social media and you see a post come up that's been fact checked and it's blacked out because it's for your safety, go into why, because they say see why, go into why they fact checked that post. It's always the most ridiculous reason. So it could be a statement that's about our dystopian lives that we live, written by somebody. You go into the post and that person never said it. So that's why they've blacked it out. No one can see it, because that person maybe never said it. They don't say that the statement is wrong, but now 90% of people haven't opened it because they don't want to open misinformation. So where can people find your work?
Yeah, wifi-refugee.com. I have a blog and I have, you can email me, and I have links to my books, and you can get them from Barnes and Noble, at least you're in the US. If you don't want to buy from Amazon, I made a point of doing that because people complain about Amazon, and so I've got them on Barnes and Noble, but people mostly still buy them on Amazon. You can buy them from me if you're in the US too. If you really want to do that, we can do that, and I'll give you a deal and you'll have a signed copy. But unfortunately, I can only do domestic shipping. It's just too crazy otherwise. I mean, if you want to pay the international shipping, then we can do that too. But I'm telling you, it can be crazy. So
and these are big books, and as you said, Shots Fired is over, I think, nearly 800 pages. It has a lot of references in it. This isn't a book on your opinion. This is a book on a lot of research. So don't dismiss it until you see it. And I'll also supply links to your website and where you can get the books and everything in the show notes. So scroll down for that too. And hopefully we can do another one or two podcasts or more in the future, because I think you're hitting a lot of big topics here that people need to know about.
All right. Well, thanks, Paul. Enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you. If you enjoyed part two of my conversation with Shannon Rowan, I encourage you to check out her website, which is wifi-refugee.com, and you can see some of her illustrations, buy her books, read some of her writings, and see what she's up to. You can also help support her work. I think she's doing great work. She's covering some amazing topics that a lot of people just aren't thinking about and could really do with reading some of these books. So check out Shots Fired, Vaccine Weapons, Medical Tyranny, and the War Against Humanity, Wi-Fi Refugee, and also Welcome to the Masquerade, and also her illustrated books with some beautiful illustrations of animals and alike. So until next time, bye. Don't forget to download the Fair Food Forager app. It's also here to help you find ethical and sustainable food, and food that is organic, local, supporting small businesses, reduced plastic packaging, anything really to help support you and the planet. And you can share good news stories, learn from each other, and just feel good for a change about the future and what we can do to help each other and the planet. If you enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to hear more, please subscribe where you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review it, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, and share it with your friends. Thanks again to Ash Grunwald. This song is River from the album Now. Until next time, bye. We live together and everybody live downstream. We live together.
A little bit of more, you know.